to the Robin the Regulator show on Fifth Wrist Radio. I'm joined tonight by my co-host, the Watch Regulator, also known as Alex, and also known as the, what is he, the 16th Earl of Bothwell. and we also have Benoit, also known as... Hi, Benoit. Also known as what already? Petite Seconde. But, how do you say that in Petite Seconde, Benoit, or what?
A petite seconde, yes. In French, it's petite seconde, but yeah.
That's what I meant to say. Okay.
Hi, guys.
Hi. Hello. Welcome.
You know what's really exciting?
What's exciting?
Benoit didn't believe when I told him there was no preparation. he messaged me and he's like, so what do I need to do? Like, what? I'm like, nothing. And he's like, yeah, I know. And I was like, no, really. Nothing. Like, don't you listen to the podcast? And he says, yeah, I listen to the podcast. I'm like, well, then you know. And he's like, no, but surely you do something. And then as soon as he came through just now, hit record. And again, he was like, what? No, we're just, what?
That's true.
So you can confirm to people now that there's zero preparation here.
I can confirm that there is no briefing. There is no, it's just click, connect and talk.
God, it's good. Right, Rob, get back to your introduction part. Sorry, I just had the button and say that.
Well, I was on mute. That's why you couldn't hear me. I already said it. did you hear my intro or not?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good. Mm-hmm. Just drinking. Mm. Okay. Well, no, what I was going to say was, I don't know what I was going to say. I was 60 seconds ago, literally, I was eating a piece of quiche. I'm trying to get some food in my stomach because I'm going to drink a lot of alcohol. And I just already drank a bit because I thought we were going to come in an hour ago. So I've got a head start. So the first whack of Chang is already gone.
The first six pack.
Yeah. Hang on, let me just open the next one so I can get well lubricated.
You're getting ahead of yourself.
No, it's okay. There's plenty more where this come from.
I mean, you're getting ahead of the drink check.
sorry. What I will say is there's only, we said there's no structure. There is a little tiny bit of structure. We have three things. Okay, we've got the drink check, the wrist check, and the bit at the end, I always stuff up when I'm just supposed to tell people what to do, who to follow, where to go and stuff. So I just tell people to go and do whatever they want. But that's the three things. So we'll kick off with a drink check. And I've sort of already cheated, so I'm going to just let people know that I'm back on the whack-a-changi. Okay. That's a...
I actually tried to find some to order from France, but you just can't get it. In France, it's something I think only in New Zealand and Australia. So
yeah, it's a pretty local thing.
That's why we left the EU because you guys were stopping us from getting whack-a-changi back in Scotland, and we're like, fuck you guys, we need the whack-a-changi. We're a drinking country.
As you do, yeah.
I think I will though do some thorough research to try and see if there is a reseller, a caviste might have some in Europe.
There must be. Hey, whereabouts are you based, Benoit?
I'm close to Besançon in France, which is eastern France, and it's just close to the Swiss border.
I've been through Besançon about a million times. I live not just on the other side of quite close to Vallorbe, just in Switzerland, just there. I have a house.
Is this a travel destination show now? Is that what this has become?
Shush. But you can probably get it in Monde des Bières. There's a shop in Geneva, or one of those sort of shops where they just specialize in international beers. It might be a little bit more expensive than we pay.
Yeah, that's not a problem, just to try it out. But I think a lot of these shops have international beers, but all don't have the whack-a-changi.
True. No.
I'm betting.
It's very rare. So rare.
It's fair, especially since we started drinking it. Now it's all gone off the shelves, basically. anyway, I'm on my second one. So we'll leave you at the guest till last because he's probably drinking something. Village or something special. What are you drinking, Alex?
I'm triple parked.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you'd be more excited than that.
I'm triple parked too now. I was quadruple parked. Now I'm only triple parked. So with what?
Yeah, but your stuff's all the same. So I've got my pint of red. So I've got a pint of... I just posted it on Instagram. I've got a pint of...
What?
Saint Martin Cabernet Sauvignon.
Oh, okay.
Then I have... Actually, I went to a watch get-together last week, the first one since the... restrictions and stuff had been lifted, and one of my good friends brought me along some booze for changing a watch strap for him. And he said, do you like Scotch whiskey or Japanese whiskey? And I said, well, I'm Scottish, so I'll drink anything. So he brought me along a bottle of Scotch and a bottle of Japanese whiskey. So I've got a bottle of Dalhwinnie. I'm trying to remember how Anthony butchered the pronunciation of it. Bottle of Dalhwinnie. And I've got a couple of Wakachangis sitting here as well.
Okay.
Amazing Wakachangis. Yep. And it's great. Everyone's drinking them now, aren't they? Because of us.
Yeah.
Or because of you, actually. Everyone's drinking Wakachangi.
I'm sure we contribute a tiny little bit of their turnover. What about you, Benoit? What are you drinking?
I'm skipping lunch for you guys. It's aperitif time. So I got out a bottle of vin d'épine, which is like a vermouth.
Mm-hmm.
Vin d'épine with aubépine, which actually my granddad made, probably around in 2014, this one.
Oh, nice.
So it looks absolutely horrible. I think I sent a photo to Alex, and I think he can confirm it looks very dodgy. Yeah. But it's
it looks
really,
like something
really
drained
nice.
Out of a car engine.
But it's really
I'm
nice.
I'm sure it's delicious.
Yeah, it is. It's very sugary. It's like a caramel flavored. And I don't know, knowing my grandpa, it's probably over 20%. and that's fine. So cheers to that.
What do you have it with? Do you mix it with something, that stuff?
No, just on ice. And and I've got a second glass of Badois just so I don't cough too much.
A second glass of what? Badois?
Yeah, Badois. That's fizzy water.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yep, sure. Oh, sorry, we're not used to the soft stuff here. We don't know.
Yeah, we don't have water around here. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't drink that much, actually. I'm not a big drinker. I like to drink not too often, but to drink well, to drink good stuff. Only good stuff.
That's my policy. Yeah. Well,
like Wakachangi.
yeah.
I'd like to taste Wakachangi just for my personal knowledge.
Yes, you need to. It's probably it's not bad. The problem is with French guys and Belgian people and stuff. There's so many nice beers over there that anything we have can tend to be a bit sort of underwhelming, I think. But anyway, it's good.
Actually, where I live, I hesitated between the vin d'épine and the local beer because there are tons of microbrewers where I live. And there's one I only just discovered, which is 5 miles from where I live. And it's a craft beer brewer and a super nice beer. I tasted the triple and the brune. I don't know. I think it's a stout. And I'm on the log now, and it's not even 10 kilometers from where I live. And if I go the other way, 10 kilometers, then there's another brewer. So we have tons of really nice small beers to taste here.
It's fine. I've finished all my booze already, just drinking through all this shit. It's fucking dire.
Alex, there's people are interested in this. Okay, we can't talk about watches all the time. Actually, we never talk about watches anyway, but we will, though. We will.
Yeah, people expect a little bit of watch content.
Okay, we'll do one more bit of watch content. We'll say, what are we wearing? And then we'll forget about watches.
Okay.
No, not really.
It's Thursday, isn't it? It is Thursday.
Yes.
So I'm wearing Longines Legend Diver 36 mil.
Ooh. Oh, nice.
Kind of faded, kind of tropic brown dial.
Nice. Okay.
Since it's Super Compressor Thursday today, yes. Something I've been trying to start for a long time. So I hope someone else in this chat who has a super compressor is wearing their super compressor also, as it is Super Compressor Thursday in all countries of the world right now.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Alex, but you haven't worn this one for a while, have you?
Not on the podcast. I think that I was actually thinking about that today. Because Rob and I normally record on kind of Mondays or Tuesdays or Fridays or Saturdays.
Or Wednesday.
Sometimes Wednesdays. Hardly ever on Thursdays. But I haven't worn it. I wore it at the get together I went to recently, but haven't had it on the podcast in ages.
I've not heard of you wearing that on the podcast, no.
Good. Well, you need to listen to some of the older episodes.
Maybe in the first I think in the first episodes.
Yeah. See? Good fan.
Number one fan.
Have you really listened to them all?
I have listened to all the podcasts from end to end, from start to finish, except I think there was one where they were talking Porsches. I know that was just, it's not my thing. So I think I skipped a little through this one. And there are a few which I listen while doing other stuff. So maybe I didn't pay close attention to every little detail.
Wait a minute. So you only listened to them once? You only listen to each episode? What? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Since I've started listening to these podcasts, I started listening also to the Scottish Watches podcast from time to time when there isn't.
I shouldn't have told you about that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a
mistake. And the big problem is it's I listen less to heavy metal now, so I think I'm starting to have health issues because I'm not getting my daily dose of heavy metal. So the Watch podcast have taken me away from my healthy daily heavy metal listening. So.
Yeah, right. Okay, well, that's different. I haven't heard that take on it, but we could fill in for a heavy. We could alternate, you know, be the alternative, I suppose. But it's nice to have our number one guest on here, especially from so far away.
I don't know if I'm the number one guest, but
I'd say you're number one guest from your town at least.
That's for sure. I don't know if you have many French listeners. I don't think you have many. You know, French are kind of very self-centered. So,
yeah. I have a few.
Yeah, Rob. No, you're trying to. We're going to get more French listeners.
I have
now.
A few mates and ex colleagues and stuff who live around there. I have someone, I have a good mate in Champagne, Champagnol, sorry.
Yes.
And a few of those places. And just across the border, the Frontalière, Anjouan, Mout, you know. But I don't think they listen because most of them, yeah, they're quite francophone and not really. I did one miserable YouTube in French video, and I got a few people looking at it.
Yes, that was great. I love that. That was awesome.
Well, don't get too crazy. I'll get you on. We'll do a joint one. Anyway, we can't get carried away too much with French tonight, or poor Alex will feel left out. I'd love to, though.
Once you have this one, then you can do another episode afterwards that I'm not on, and you can just French it up as much as you like.
That's true. We need to do one for our continental listeners. Yeah.
Why not? For our francophile.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm wearing, I've just broken out, actually, it's kind of a, you know, little brand Ezza that I sell?
Mm-hmm.
Ezza watches from Pforzheim. I don't know how you say that. Wait, how do you say that word in half German, half French? Benoit? Pforzheim in Germany?
I am really no good at German. Don't ask me for German words.
I'm glad. Me either. But they have the Air Fighter, of which I've had and sold. I've got black models and blue ones, really cool watches. But this one's a bronze one. And Adrian has just launched a Kickstarter project campaign, actually, for this bronze watch to sell a few of them and to raise some money because he's a tiny company. And he actually sent me this one. I ordered it probably a few months, you know, at the end of last year, basically. And he said, oh, it's only prototype, but I'll send you one anyway since you want to buy one. I, you know, try and sell it. And I haven't really advertised that at all. I haven't even sort of marketed it because he hadn't bought it out yet officially. So I've got one of the very first all bronze Ezza Air Fighters. It's got a green dial and green bezel. It's a nice watch, but I've not worn it. Well, it's a brand new watch, so I don't wear it. Obviously, it's a new stock, but I've sort of put it on and put it in the last hole just so I can sort of have a look at it and tell the listeners about it. That's me.
Is it got a steel case back?
Yes, correct. Yes.
So what's the deal? So I saw the Oris have got a new
I saw that too,
thing. Okay, so explain to me. So you can have a bronze bracelet.
Well, not really.
But then the case back is steel and the inside of the clasp is steel. Why can the case back not be bronze?
Or at least plated so it looks kind of golden. I know, that's what I do. You know, like make it gold capped or...
Yeah.
You know, so it kind of keeps the same... because it's really ugly when you have the steel back on the...
Yeah, it ruins it for me. I thought it was too. Because you couldn't have the if the bronze was on your skin, it would react or irritate you or something. But this one has a bronze bracelet. So
it has a bronze bracelet. The problem with bronze on bronze... So if you had a bronze back as well, a secondary problem... is that when you screw it in, it's a screw in back, and bronze on bronze,
it fuses together.
Yeah, it binds together much more. And I think that's...
So it's like titanium.
Yes. And I've got a bronze watch here. I can't get the back off somewhere. But this one, it's got a steel back. But I think Yeah, I think the bronze bracelet, I mean, it's a bit of a shortcut. I mean, I didn't make any comments on it. I was on a Zoom the other night with the Oros guys. And, yeah, it's kind of a – they just bang them. You're definitely going to have a green ring around your wrist. And that's probably, you know, why they've mostly put steel backs on watches. But the bracelet, yeah.
I'd prefer that than having the steel back on it, to be honest.
You can't see the back of the watch.
I prefer to have a – you can.
You can't. Not this one. Person. It's a big dive watch. I mean, you can't see that. Trust me, you can't.
Chronograph. I don't like any dive watches that are chronographs.
It's not a chronograph. I would
rather have a green wrist.
Are you talking about the Oros? Yes. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, that you can see. On this one I have in front of me, you can't see the back. It's quite discreet, and it's got a beautiful quilted leather bracelet, which comes on it. So yeah, you know, it's not mono. It's not a Geneva blue.
Okay, that's fine.
You maybe talk about Geneva blue bracelets.
Yeah.
And so, Benoit, what are you wearing? You got your compressor on?
No, because there is another.
Right, let's wrap it.
a patina Thursday, and actually, yesterday I was wearing my Sima Dirty Dozen watch, and I actually wanted to wear it again today, so I put it back on and I changed the strap because I had it on a leather NATO.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's on an AF210 strap, which is like an exact replica of the straps that they made for these watches at the time.
Yeah, because you reviewed that on the site, right? And I remember you talk about the strap in it. That was like a really cool touch, actually, that people out there have recreated the actual strap for it.
Yeah, but they have recreated it in such a passionate way. Because they, you know, they actually bought back some of the machines that were used to make them, and they did tryouts and compared with NOS examples, you know, old stock examples, and they scanned the buckles and the buckle parts, you know, the little things where the strap fits in, to make the exact replicas and make them exactly the same way. And the only difference between the original straps is actually that they stamp on it the Army logo and the AF210 just so that you can't take one and sell it as an original new old stock.
Okay, yeah.
You know, it's kind of a geeky thing, but when you're into vintage watching, the real aim is to kind of find the original strap that came with the watch, or at least something that's
similar.
It actually looks better on the leather NATO, I find. But for fuck's sake, you know, if I can wear it on the AF210, and I'll wear it on the AF. So it's patina Thursday. I hesitated with a super compressor, but I've been wearing it at the start of the week, and I just wanted to. Sorry, Alex. Still wearing a cool watch. Still vintage.
But that's actually, it's a really good review that you did. I remember that now. The when you're talking about the watch strap towards the end of the review, and you were getting super passionate about other people being passionate about creating a watch strap. Because, I mean, how many of those can they sell? Like, they can't sell many of those straps.
Oh, they do. They do.
They're not going to make $1 million, though, right?
No. It's very... So they have it in the original color, which is like a sand color. And they also now make it in green and black. And so you have some kind of choice. But I think there is a small market, because, you know, these are quite collectible watches, and there are people who are collecting the dozen, a correct strap for each one. And but no, I don't believe they make many. I had a friend who recently found a Longines Marine Nationale, so another military watch, and he was asking me about what kind of strap he should put on it, and he was going to buy, you know, like a ZRC, like a standard leather strap. And I said, no, you have to buy an AF210 because, you know, it's period correct and it will look great. And I think they're only, it's a British company who makes them. So it's only like £35, around the £50 mark. So it's not like £120 or euro strap. You know, it's kind of good value. And you get a really, it's very comfortable. It's quite a unique, I've never had a strap like this before. So it's really fun to wear the watch as it should be worn.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, Alex, well, that's a really awesome dial on that watch that Benoit's got, basically. I mean, I hadn't looked at it properly. Those photos are sensational.
Oh, he takes amazing
Yeah, man.
But the dial is really, I can't even render it on photo. It's so caramel and it's absolutely stunning. And it's all natural patinas. There's no, you know, there's no cheating or anything.
It looks like a little bit of like a, star formation, or a little nebula type thing, a cloudy things, a bit of a sort of a...
Yeah, it's cloudy. It's a bit golden. It's caramel. And actually, you know, when the sun hits it, well, no, it's all radium dust, so it's radioactive as hell. And and when the sun hits it, it's really beautiful. And, you know, it's not a very beautiful watch for non-watch collectors. You know, it's a military watch with a black-brown dial, and my wife hates it. But, you know, this one, when we're outside and the sun's flashing on it, and she looks at me and says, "Wow, you know, the watch is beautiful." No, because it's just beautiful. It's got this unique kind of glint. It's quite something. And I actually, this watch, I've been looking for a Dirty Dozen for a long time, and not really knowing which one I'd like, and going through regularly pages on eBay or on forums and searching for one. And I saw this one on Instagram. It's from some New York guys who sell watches, those watch guys. And as soon as I saw it, I thought, well, this is it. This is the one. It's all in preserved condition. It's been worn. It's already had a life of its own. You can still see the radium, but it's speckled everywhere. And so I didn't even discuss anything. I just bought the watch, and I don't regret it because it's a great watch. Honestly, I wrote the review really passionately because I was really in love with the watch. Great, great surprise, this one.
The hands on it, they almost look furry. There's so much texture there. It's insane.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I can understand why someone who wasn't a watch person would look at it and go, "Oh, that's just some old watch." But there's so much character in it. The character's like bursting out of the thing.
I did some micro shots and I put a couple on Instagram of the hands, and it's just another world. It's like it's alive, you know.
Yeah. It's like a forest or something.
Yeah, like live moss. And, you know, I think maybe people even vomited watching the photographs. But it's pretty disgusting up close, but it's how it is. It's original radium from, you know, like 45 or 46 maybe. So
wow. It kind of reminds me of the dial number, that old Tudor I have, that old Tudor sub I have, Alex, the one with it's really bubbly, and you look at it up close under a loop and it's like, my goodness, it just looks a mess. But it really comes across well as in photo, well, you know, for the watch guys, it's got real true patina. It's like, but those hands on that Seamer, there's something else. Is that the only one you have? The only Dirty Dozen watch you have, Benoit?
Yeah, I'd love to try and hunt the others, because owning a watch is something, but the most pleasure you get is when you're hunting.
Yes.
So I'd love to hunt the others. I have other priorities budget wise for other watches though. So, you know, it's like in the back of my head, and I'll probably get some others, but I think I'm just going to take my time to collect them. You know, like maybe take 30 years or so, but I don't care.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, it's kind of a long-term goal. I'm not really stressed about it.
How did you get into watches in the first place?
I've always worn watches since I was a kid, because I always liked wearing them. I've never really been really interested in the technical stuff until a few years back. But I remember my dad always said he wanted to buy a Reverso all his life. And for his 50th birthday, he bought himself a Jaeger LeCoultre Reverso, a classic size, manual wound, and engraved the back to his initials. And I thought, that was 12 years ago. And I thought, that's interesting. And I started to look at mechanical watches, and I found it fun. And then I discovered the automatic movement and discovered how it works. And I completely fell in awe of the technique of having, you know, a watch that auto-winds on the wrist. It's kind of like magic. So roughly 10 years ago, I said to my wife, we got married, and I told her, look, I'd really like to get a nice automatic watch. You know, it had to be automatic with with a see-through back, so I could see the rotor, and I wanted a Swiss watch, and you know, I had a budget of roughly 1,000 euros, so I started digging and looking at what can I buy, which is and I was more into dress watches, and I finally chose a Frédéric Constant, classic tank shaped. With a see-through back, and I, you know, I was no Rolex geek. I didn't know anything about haute horology, or, you know, I just thought, you know, it's Swiss-made movement. It looks good. It's I like the dial layout. I like everything. So that was my first really real automatic watch, real watch, which I wore every day. Every day was my my only watch. I was really an only one watch guy, and then. Few years later, I got back a little into some interest for the watches, and the System 51 came out. You know, the Swatch with all machine made, held by one screw, automatic movement, and I thought that was really, really cool, very innovative. So I bought as a second watch the System 51 Black, the first edition, just for fun. And so living up to the Swatch name, you know, I think you both know Swatch means second watch. So my second watch was a Swatch. So, you know, all falls into place. And then, so that's how I first got, but I wasn't on Instagram or on social media, on forums or anything. It was just like, you know, I enjoy the aesthetics and the fact that it's automatic. So it winds on the wrist is kind of, was kind of magic for me. Just to close, I was what really got me into the whole Instagram watch community, collecting watches, was I was following on Instagram some watch accounts, some vintage watches, because I've always liked antiques and, you know, old paintings and things like that, and old jewelry. And I found vintage watches an interesting concept, and I found it quite amazing that these, you know, 50, 100-year-old watches were still ticking away and being preserved. And there was those watch guys, the guys I bought the Simmer from in New York, they had a lip watch, 1940s military lip, LG Loy.
I know lip, but what's the reference for it?
There's no reference. It's a vintage military watch. They did lip LG Loy. You know, there was LG Loy written on the dial. It's so when they partnered with Elgin they used the Elgin unbreakable spring at the time, and they wrote Elgin on the dials. Okay. And I found this lip watch in New York, and I found it really beautiful. And I thought, hey, I live in Besançon. These guys in New York have a watch that was made in Besançon in the 1940s. That's just crazy. So I've delved into it, and they were selling it for like $500 or $600. And I thought that was a very big price. And I thought to myself, well, you know, they were made here, so there's doubtlessly some watches laying around that I can find, that I can repair, or, you know, find a watchmaker. So I found one for 80 euros, found a watchmaker, made it to work again. And I had my lip watch made in Besançon from the 40s. And that's how I really got kicked into the collecting and hunting vintage watches.
I really like Lip as a brand. They made some really cool looking watches and lots of kind of different looking stuff. Some kind of,
yes, lots of designs
stuff, but some kind of crazy, kind of funky stuff as well. Very French, I would describe the brand as.
Yes, Lip was the biggest French watch manufacturer. You know, in the golden years were probably the 50s, the 60s, and it's a big part of French history, because there was a bigger financial crisis for Lip, and there was a social
kind of unrest.
Yeah, a lot, and it was in all the media, and the company just basically sank. But they made really quality watches, and they made a various scope of watches, from, you know, high-end dress chronometer watches to chromed things that you can buy with your newspaper, you know, in a tabac shop. So very wide array, and they had great in-house movements. They were the first to produce the very first electromechanical watch. It was Leap in the 60s. The watches that that Eisenhower had one, I think, and the General de Gaulle.
Like, you can still get Leap now, can't you? But it's one of those repurchase or some invented brand, and they still do, because they still do like a super compressor one, which I've been tempted to get, but just I think I'd rather just get an original one, to be honest. But
yeah, the group that owns Leap now is starting to get it, is trying to get it back on a good industrial scene, but they mostly do re-editions, mostly quartz, mostly pretty poor quality. They have a couple of watches with Miyota movements that are nice. They have a diver that came out that's pretty solid, you know, that you can compare to a Squall or to a Yema or something like that. But mostly it's like low end quartz. It's not very interesting, and they still have financial problems, I think. But you'd be better off looking into the history of the brand. And a super compressor like the one I have is such a fantastic watch.
There was actually somebody. Yeah, there's somebody in Melbourne that I met at, I can't remember, a Tudor event that I was at with Vinny from Tell Your Time. And yeah, once people figure out I'm in the industry or I allegedly fix watches, suddenly all these people are coming up to me and saying, right, so I've got this watch, it's not working. And I always just say yes to, like, it's either the best thing or the worst thing. Like, when somebody comes and asks me something, I'll always try and fix it. If it's an easy fix, I'll try and fix it. So this guy gave me his Leap super compressor, and the inner rotating bezel was lifting on it. So I ended up fixing it, but I had to take the plexi out of my Hamilton super compressor and fit it. And then the bezel rotated properly, so my Hamilton super compressor is still in bits, and I need to get a new plexi for that. But I think the Leap brand, yeah, they did some really cool stuff, and that one they've got that has the three colored balls on the side.
Yeah, the Rudy Meyer. No, it's not Rudy Meyer, it's the other one. It's the, I don't remember. It was the time they paired with designers to make bold the design. So there was Rudy Meyer, and there was it's on the tip of my tongue, but I can't remember.
Not the guy still around.
I don't even know if he's still around. No, I don't think so. But yeah, it's very, very good designs and great movements. If you really think about it, you know, mechanical watches have been around forever. And quartz watches have been around since quartz has been invented, quartz movements. But you don't really get any electromechanical watches now, do you? It seems to have completely disappeared. So when I've got an Omega with a tuning fork movement, and I've got this Leap with the electromechanical, and I think it's brilliant movements. And I think we could probably be able today to make these kinds of movements again, if we put some time and effort, and they'd probably be very efficient and very accurate. And I've always wondered why that has stopped, why the mechanical continued, the automatics continued, but the electromechanical ones have just, apart from like the Jaune one, which has a kind of electromechanical components, I don't know of any watches that do this. And I think it's a shame, because they are a great fun to wear.
I didn't realize that that it was Lippmann, the guy's name, the guy that found, I didn't know it was after his name, Lippmann.
Fred Lippmann, yes. And, I read a book about Leap, because it's a very interesting historical brand, and there is a big fan base in France. There are a lot of watch collectors who collect Leap, like there are swatch collectors, you know, those collectors who collect swatch, and they have hundreds and hundreds of swatches in box, you know, quartz skin, you know. Things like that, and they have hundreds, and each one comes out. I know each time there's a new one, they buy it, and there are vintage Leap collectors like that who have hundreds of Leap watches, and they just want to have, you know, it's like Pokemon. You've got to catch them all, and you just can't, because there's so many different, so many different designs, so many different configurations. It's so there is a big fan base, and collector community in France for LIP watches. So I'm sure one day LIP will remake a proper movement and become a manufacturer again. I'm hoping it will happen if they come out with the R23 movement again, which is a great workhorse movement. You know, if tomorrow LIP comes out with a new watch with a R23 movement, you know, homemade, I'll just buy one straight away. I'm not even, you know, it's just so much history there.
Well, I think the Swatch collectors back in the day when they first started out, I guess there was a lot less models. And my brother-in-law did that. He was, when he was a teenager, you know, he just bought every Swatch that came out basically. And he's got boxes and boxes of them still, and he ended up making big wall collages and stuff out of these watches. but I think the LIP's even more so, because French in general, you're very patriotic people and you like the French stuff. You know, you're not, and you, some of you don't necessarily like the Swiss stuff or the whole Swiss concept thing. So you want to stick with what's local.
Yeah. It's, well, you know, you have obviously brands like Cartier or things like this, but you know, they're more or less Swiss now. The French manufacturers, I think now you can count them on one hand. There's LIP, of course. There's Pequinier who make in-house.
Is Pequinier still going?
Yeah. It is still going. I don't think they're in a very strong financial position.
No.
But they are still making watches, still selling them, and they still have nice watches because, you know, they're what's it called, the Calibre Royal.
It's beautiful,
and it's great watches. There's Yema, who uses ETA and Miyota, and they are making nice. I think that they're doing pretty well, and they did well releasing the Superman like they did, because it was a good reedition. And I know, and there's a couple of micro brands like Baltic and things like that. But you know, there's no real horology in France now, apart from some micro brands, some companies making movements again, or making parts, or making bracelets, or making watch cases. In where I live, it's still a very there is still a big big businesses for watches, because there is still a lot of parts being made in France and then going across the border to be fitted into Swiss watches. So there is still an industry, and it's steadily rising from what I've heard, because the quality is there. So when the quality is there, you know, the work goes on.
There was that, there was also, what was that brand? There was some, I'm just trying to think now apart from something like Baltic, I don't know, there's Yema, I've seen something, ZRC or something that like the...
Yes, ZRC have a vintage diver, ZRC. They've come back too, but they made a great reedition of the, you know, it's the diver with the crown at 6 o'clock.
Oh yeah, 6 o'clock, yes.
And they also had, at the time, I think they had kind of a extendable metal bracelet technology, so you have the ZRC bracelets too. And so they came out with a re-edition, and it worked well. And I think the only reason it worked well because the vintage ZRCs are so hard to find, and they're worth thousands. You know, and you know, you have to be honest, all these skin divers aren't really, you know, very technological watches. You know,
nice way to put it.
Yeah, but you know, they have Francais Bauche movements in it. They have old ETA movements. It's not high end watchmaking. It's not great finish. You have to be honest on those vintage pieces. So when you have the vintage one, which has heavy patina, which has parts change, which is not waterproof, and which is worth €6,000. And then you have ZRC coming out with a modern étanche ETA movement for like 1,000, or I don't know how much they are, 1,500, or you know, you just go for the modern re-edition. So it worked a while, but I think they're in a bit of trouble now, because they've it's run out. You know, they've sold the ZRC watches to the people who wanted them, and then you know, who's going to buy a? Yeah, I think so.
It's cool when not everyone else has one of those, but then as soon as too many people have got them, then it's not that cool anymore. And I know somebody in Melbourne that told me that they got one or their friend got one, and it had quality control issues, and then it couldn't get fixed locally, and then I had to go back to get fixed. And it wasn't a movement issue. It was a crown issue. And when they contacted them, they said that's a known problem, but send it back and we'll fix it. So I think they were, I'm not saying, like, I know lots of brands send out stuff that isn't ready for public consumption yet, but I think that was the case with them. And when you're doing small quantities like that, it becomes more apparent that it's not ready for public
consumption. Yeah, it's a problem, and you know, and it has a very peculiar look. So unless you're passionate about vintage divers, and you like, and your granddad had a vintage ZRC when he was diving in the lakes in Switzerland, who's going to want to buy a watch that looks so strange, even if it's nicely finished, if it's kind of a micro market. So I think, and if they come out with something else, then people will say, well, look, you know, it's not at all the brand's DNA or whatever, and people won't be happy. So I think they're stuck in this, the same way Yamaha is stuck with the heritage. At one point these brands have to break the mold and come out with something different. And I think that's where brands like Baltic really really do well, because they just make all the right choices all along.
They kind of do vintage feel without being just solid reissues, or that's the thing. I think once you're tied to just, I mean, I can't wait now for, if you're saying ZRC are having trouble, I can't wait for the next time someone restarts ZRC. It's going to be like the bloody Spider-Man movie series where there's like 8 Spider-Mans in 4 years. And I think that could potentially be the future of vintage watch reissues. Somebody else tried to bring it back before and it didn't work, but we'll do it properly this time. I think that's a real danger of damaging the market.
Well, what ZRC are doing? I think I saw passing the latest version of the ZRC watch, and basically they changed dial and bezel colors and they changed the hands a little, and it was just a horrible blue. It was ugly as fuck, but the problem is that these brands don't have the money to try out 12 dials, you know, to make 12 different dials to see which one's the best. So they just go on an idea and they go all the way through because they have no choice, because they don't have the money to do lots of tryouts. And basically, you know, if they get it wrong, then it's the end. And that's kind of sad because it's, you know, I think they deserve to be there. But it's a tough world for these small brands who are trying to grow and who don't have the money of Vacheron Constantin or of Gégère Lecoultre, who can just spend years researching for a new dial. You know, it's a different world. So we'll see how it goes. But I hope I'm pretty sure the French watches will keep going and the market will evolve and there'll be new stuff and there'll be good and bad. And I just hope it just keeps going steadily upwards.
Yeah, the Peking year, for example, that's one of the problems for the rest of the world is I can't say the name properly. But I remember seeing it. I played with it. I talked to a guy that was some get together in the Jura somewhere, a guy that worked there, a gentleman who worked at Peking year, and they were doing these phenomenal movements. I played with his watch, and you could adjust the date forward, back, everything. You know, it was and the look. Great, the movement, the case was nice, but yeah, they had this. You know, after a certain price, you know, they're up against the Swiss, basically, or even a lower tier Swiss brand, or even a good Swiss brand. The Peking, they're not cheap.
No, well, they're not cheap, but the movement is really good. You know, if you look at it, yes. And basically, they have. If you look at the collection, you know, for us watch geeks, they have basically two watches. There's the classical one with a kind of a fancy lugs, which is the heritage watch, and you can have it with complications and all. And there's and they have a diver too, which is a really, really nice diver. I've tried it on in Besançon in the boutique, and it's a great watch, and you can have fun colors with it, blue and black and orange, and the movement inside is the same as the one in the fancy dress with the Calibre Royale.
Okay.
So you've got a great in-house movement, you've got a nice case finish, know, beautiful Odaiba, it's restaurant 4,000 euros, I think. So, you know, you're competing against Tudor Pelagus, against the Black Bay, against watches like that. And honestly, it's a good competitor, but they don't have the power of those brands. They don't have the, you know, the commercial, you know, to push forward the watch in magazines, on, you know, on whatever, even on Instagram. So they're stuck with that basically.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because it's true. It's a vicious cycle. If you don't spend enough, you know, trying to market the watch, they're not going to sell any, not going to sell enough, and it can often go pear shaped because they just can't get past that equilibrium of having, you know, gaining momentum for the brand. And it's a pity. And this is one that's been come and gone sort of thing. And they've been in and out of financial strife. Even when I was living in Switzerland, it was a pity because they were fantastic watches. I've not really looked at the Diver much. They got a Pilot watch, haven't they, now as well? I think.
And have you? I think they have one. I've not followed closely.
But you know, they're always up against that thing where, I mean, I love having anything but Swiss on the dial. You know, Fabriqué en France, why not? It's beautiful. It's nice to have on the dial. But you know, it's just if it was 50 Ks further on and in the edge of Switzerland, they could probably charge an extra 30% for it, basically.
That's exactly it.
it's interesting. But I'm sure, you know, in that area around Besançon and Franche-Comté, whatever they call that area.
Yeah, Franche-Comté, yes.
There's a lot of, you know, old brands around there, you know, obviously with the chronometry thing in Besançon back in the day, and there must have been
Well, you know, the chronometry is still going. You can still have your watch officially certified with the Viper stamp on the movement.
Yeah, that's right. One brand has done that as well. I forget who it was, but
there are three places in the world where you can get the chronometer grade on watch. There's the Cosque in Switzerland. There's the one in the USA, I can't remember the name, and there's the one in Besançon. And there is only one in the world who times the actual watch. If you get Cosque, it's the movement you're getting chronometer. And then you take the movement, they send it back, and you put it in a case, and then you send the watch. But in Besançon, you have to send the whole watch. So you really have... And that's a big difference because lots of things can happen between the time it's been cosque and the time it's been cased and sold, but not much can happen between the time it's been officially certified in Besançon and the time it's in the shop. So you're getting
true,
and I think that's why we still manage to do this in Besançon because there's quality behind and it's what keeps it going. And I actually worked with a watchmaker and I had an indie once and it had an ETA movement and I had it serviced by my watchmaker and he told me, well, do you want me to certify it chronometre? It's 500 euros. I send it to the observatoire and they do the test. They keep it for a month or so. And then you get your Viper stamped chronometre ETA movement. And that's really cool. Not done it, but for pure passion.
No. You can, yeah. It's nice to know you can. No, yeah. It's they have such a massive history. It's brilliant. And I think Qualité Fleurier up in Fleurier, they were trying to do something similar. But yeah, that's the thing that people don't often, or they forget, or they don't even know with Cosque, is that it's not cased. So there's a lot of stuff around there, and you're into the historical ones, but you have some new ones as well, don't you? You have some pretty modern timepieces. I love that. You have the Bulgari Finissimo, no?
Yeah, that's a crazy watch. I was trying it out 2 years ago in Lyon, and just to try it out, and I was completely struck by it when I put it on the wrist. It's so light. It's so I have a skeletonized one, and that's the one I try out first, which is really nice. It's well finished and it's so light. It's I think you can't really, you know, every time people talk to me about that watch, I just say, look, just go and try it out. You have to go in a boutique, put it on the wrist, and just look at it and just. Either you fall for it, and most people do because it's a pretty unique experience. You don't get a watch that light, that's strong in aesthetics. You know, it's completely different than any other watch I've worn and any other experience I've had wearing watches. So I fell for it, and it took me 1 year to find the one I really wanted, to really know which one I wanted.
Yeah, well, I'm in that boat now. I'm just sort of figuring out which one I want and trying to know what I can sell to buy it, basically. I mean, I saw, yeah, when they first came out, I thought, this is pretty cool. I think I tried it on. Maybe a niche had one or something. I remember, and it looked quite, at the start, I thought, oh, it's just another Octo. You know, there's some big Octos out there, but that was just so thin. And then I tried it on, sort of liked it, and then it grew on me more and more. And then the other day, when I posted the other day, I was trying them on in the place here in Perth, and I was just like, I really got to have one of these. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's crazy watch, and I really like what they're doing with the different what they're coming out with. You know, they're changing dials, changing textures, changing, just, you know, making it evolve in a nice way. I feel it's a very dynamic range of watches, and there's something for everyone. Well, and you know, it's and you're touching luxury watches, but it's still in a budget which is accessible. You know, you're in the Rolex sports model range budget, so you know, lots of people, anyone who has a Rolex sports model can buy a Bulgari instead. So you're in a, you know, it's not like when you're looking at a Patek Philippe or, you know, things which are like 20, 30K, 50K, you know, like a Jaune or, but you're touching the same world. And it's basically a great value for buck, I find, in the luxury watch range.
I think because it's more of a polarizing design, though, I think that's the thing that people probably struggle with. I think if it was anything else, it's the design is pretty out there compared to, and I think that's its strength as well as the actual quality of the product. But I think for a lot of people, they would look at it and it is kind of an attack on the eyes sometimes. You have to be a fairly confident person to wear a watch like that, I would imagine.
Like Rob said, these Octofinissimo actually grow on you, because at first you look at them on photographs, in press releases, on Instagram, and you think, oh, I know, that's strange, or, you know, not for me, you know, it's all square and lines, and, you know, and, oh, it must be so thin. So you kind of don't grab it yet, and then once you try it on, it's just the feel of it. The feel of it is so different than you say that you think, oh, wow. No, just, wow, you're gobsmacked. And then you kind of think of it months and months again, and you think, oh, no, I actually really like this one. And, oh, you know, it would be good to have that one. And it kind of grows on you until you take the step and buy one. And I've had lots of people who, when I started posting pictures of it, asked me questions about it, and I just said, go, look, just go and try it out and make your own mind about it. And I've had maybe two or three people who actually bought a Finissimo because they saw my photos, they went in the boutique, they tried one on, and then they figured out, one bought a chronometer one, another one bought a time-only one, and because it just grows on you. And you can't find anything else which is the same. You know, if you buy an Audemars Piguet, a Royal Oak, or a Nautilus, or a Vacheron Constantin overseas, you basically get the same feel of the watch. You know, it's basically the same kind of watch. If you take a dress watch, a Jaeger LeCoultre Master Thin thing, you basically get all the same feelings from the different brands. But try to find something that brings you maybe the Piaget ultra flat one. Yeah, maybe this one, but you know, it's so thin.
That's
that,
only the same in terms of thinness. That, I mean, that's what attracts me to the Bulgari, is the thinness to it. But aesthetically, I think I would prefer the Piaget. But I think when you're talking about value in terms of everything, like it is like a total package in terms of the quality of construction, the thinness, the look, it has everything.
Look, if for example Omega came out with a titanium watch, you know, with the crown which was inside the case, do you remember that? I think maybe
yeah,
one
yeah,
year
I like that
ago
one, actually. I've never seen one in person, but I like the look of it. not for 60,000 or whatever it cost them.
Yeah, that's the problem. You know, that can compete with the Finissimo. I know, because it's technically interesting. It's got that very lightweight titanium feel, and the, and there's a bold design, and yet, but you know, on the, on one hand, you can find secondhand a Finissimo for 8,000, 9,000 euros. And on the second hand, if you want to buy that watch, it's over 50K. I mean, come on, it's just completely different. So, and I think that's why they're doing so well at Bulgari, because I know a couple of people who work at Bulgari, because living where I live, there are lots of frontaliers, as said, Rob, people who live in France who work in Switzerland. So I know a couple of people in Audemars Piguet and at Bulgari, and the guy at Bulgari told me, well, you know, we just keep selling them. They just keep selling the Finissimo and the chronograph one with the GMT, which is an awesome watch. And, you know, you just can't find it. You have to, if you want to try one on, you have to phone and have one brought in and try it on. You know, you can't just walk in a boutique and find one. They're just selling them like we're just selling. And that's great for them. I'm really happy for them.
I tried one on. Yeah. There's a couple of them both here, and I tried both on. I wasn't really that impressed with the chrono. I think just that 2 mil bigger just makes it a bit too big for me. Anyway, you'd have to be a big guy, I think, to wear the chrono.
Yeah, it's being slightly so too flat, big. Yes,
it's kind of out of proportion. The standard time is perfect, I think. Yours is a limited edition, no? The blue numerals.
Yeah, it's got blue hands and blue numerals. 200 of these made.
Who for? Where for? Is it an Italian one or something? Or
No. I think it's just a boutique edition. They also had one I saw with like a burgundy red index and hands, which I don't know what it was for. But and they made a green one with Arabic numerals with those strange. I don't like those. For the Middle East, they made one too in limited edition.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I don't know which one I'd go for. I mean, it would be time only, I think. But I mean, it's one of those things where. But here,
it's the most accessible one.
Tried them both, and it's as you say. But they've got a great management team. You know, they're brilliant. No, I was going to say that. You know, that the company. That's why the company is so well. They just manage it so well. Obviously, the guys running it, they're doing a good job. The marketing is top notch.
And the watch is good. And, you know, when the watch is good, ask anyone. Big watch collectors have a Finissimo because it's a great watch. If you are thinking about someone like, you know, maybe, you know, Santa Laura on Instagram, which is a big, big collector. Well, he has, I think, he has a gold, rose gold with tourbillon or something like that, you know, and he's got a Finissimo. And if you, lots of people who like AP, who like Patek Philippe, they often have a Finissimo too, because you know it's just a great watch, and I really enjoy mine.
It's definitely something that's easy to enjoy, I'd imagine. But that it's got that whole thing going with the Gerald Genta thing with the circle within this the octagon, not an octagon, but whatever it is, and it's the same. You know, we see that as well with either I think you love it or you hate it, or your mind gets it or not. Same with the AP. You know, the circles and the square shape. So it's kind of one of those things where it's quite different, and that's what I think. I didn't like it at the start, especially with the thicker octos. You know, the first ones, but with this, the proportions just work so nice. It's just such a beautiful, beautiful piece.
The classic octos are nice, but they're not groundbreaking. They're not very, not as much interest in them. But they're nice watches too. You know. Good movement and a great finish.
And some Seikos too. No, I did not see a Seiko in your feed.
I've had so many watches.
You flip a few, do you?
No, just Seikos. You know, I dropped a review, but it tells everything you need to know about me and Seiko in the first two lines. So,
right, okay.
Hodinkee one, right?
Yeah. I think lots of people get into watches through Seiko because they have the interest in horology, and when budget wise you want a great watch, you know, just go for a Seiko or a Citizen. And I didn't go through all that phase. No, I just jumped straight into the Swiss Frédéric Constant, you know, Swiss movements, and so I don't I didn't have any family members who had psychos or who praised a psycho. So I don't have all that historic feeling with it. So it's not a brand that I particularly appreciate. I think they do great watches. I find them weird, but I have no soft spot for them. I've tried a few, I've had a few, and it never really worked on a long-term basis.
It's more like for fun, like as you know, with a Swatch, same sort of thing. You just get it for the fun of it. It looks nice. You wear it for
a bit. I had a diver like that. I had a Psycho Diver, which has I think it had two colored loom, green and blue, and it was a really fun watch. But you know, once the fun's gone, you kind of go onto something else. For me, at all.
Okay, while we're talking about Omega and tourbillons and stuff, have you seen the new Master Fancy Chronometer Tourbillon Center Tourbillon thing? Have you seen that?
The latest one with the tourbillon at center?
Yeah, the one that's a Master Chronometer one, yeah.
Well, they did come out with tourbillon at center a couple of years back, didn't they?
I think yes. This one's the first kind of Master, it's a Master coaxial one rather than whatever the... I've seen one of the other ones before. It's pretty cool. Not for me, but it's more the kind of advancement into the Master chronometer thing that I think is...
I must say I haven't delved into it too far because, you know, there's a tourbillon and it's a very special piece and they probably will make only a handful of them. And, you know, I had other things to do than just look at watches that don't particularly appeal to me, and I just won't buy anyway. So, so I didn't look into the details. And the first thing I thought was, well, hang on, they just came out with that 2 years ago, or, you know, with the central tourbillon, and I stopped there. But I'm not a big Omega fanboy either.
What about you, Rob? Have you seen it?
Yeah, not in the flesh. I quite like it. There's a lot of marketing buff of, you know, around it, but I can see the attraction, and I'm sure there's guys that will buy it, the big fanboys. I'm not sure about the inner sort of that bezel looking, the fluted bit in the middle. It sort of turned me off a little bit. I like the old ones, some of the old ones, the old central tourbillons. This one, I don't know. It seems, I mean, it's really pushing the boat out. It's a show off piece. They got to do something, right?
Who's buying, if somebody's buying a tourbillon, who's buying Omega tourbillon. If you're going to buy an Omega tourbillon, then you might as well buy a Tag tourbillon, and it's going to cost 25 grand rather than 170 or whatever this one costs.
I'm just looking at it right now. Yeah, it's nice looking, but like you said, who wears tourbillons anyway? You know, it's a show off piece for me. So no real interest.
And if you get a tourbillon, if you bump into someone else with a tourbillon and they don't have an Omega tourbillon, they're going to be like, I see you're just wearing an Omega tourbillon.
Technically, Alex, if you bump into someone with a tourbillon, the tourbillon stops working. That's the thing. So
if it hasn't stopped working before,
if I had to buy a tourbillon, it would probably be a jaune tourbillon with a remontoir d'égalité or something like that. If I had to buy one tourbillon, it'd be that.
Yeah, and if you were wearing that and then you bumped into someone with an Omega tourbillon, you would...
Then I'll send it back to... And then we'll be hoping François Paul is not dead yet, because that's basically it. No, you can't... I'm not into these tourbillon things. It's too expensive.
Same. I never see the point at all, really. I never did. But I remember that. It's a bit of a fad, isn't it? I mean, you remember when I first got into watches, or even, you know, 20 years ago, there was a handful of brands doing tourbillons. Now it's just, you know, there's just so many, and often they're farmed out to specialists, to high-end complication specialists. I don't see the traction, really.
You know what? Instead of having a tourbillon, I would rather have that MBNF dog watch, you know, the hound watch. Have you seen that? The bulldog, and it's got a power reserve, which is the drawers opening and closing. Have you seen that? And I find that I found that much more interesting than having a tourbillon. I found that just so much more fun, and I, you know, the whole concept of going all the way to make it like a jaw, and I prefer it when brands do that kind of innovation or take that path and just you know, well, we took this tourbillon and we tilted it 45 degrees. Well, great. You know, I just don't care. You know, it's not interesting for me.
Yeah, it's a really superseded. I mean, okay, mechanical watches are, you know, old technology anyway, and they're superseded technology. No, but
arguing over stupid things.
But the tourbillon is even if it takes the superseded stuff to the next level. Anyway, you like them or you don't. I guess if I had lots more money, I'd probably have one. But I can't see the point really.
I think with it being my only kind of thing that makes me can actually think about it, because I'm not interested in tourbillons either, is just the fact that it's one of these master coaxial chronometer things that's supposed to be, I mean, it seems like it could potentially be the first everyday tourbillon that someone could wear every day.
That's more exciting than the tourbillon itself.
Yeah, totally.
Which I sort of think was the attraction of Richard Mills back at the start, because they were very robust and they were thrown around and stuff and they were banging against walls and they kept going. And traditionally, tourbillon's been a very fragile sort of movement, basically. So, yeah, you're right. But, I mean, still, you know, it's in a tourbillon, it's an Omega, and it's very expensive. So, you know, whatever. Have you guys heard of a brand called Orpheon? You would have heard of it, Benoit. Orpheon watches?
Yeah.
Orpheon?
Yeah, I've heard of it. I'll search it right now.
And I think that's young French guys. They have some brilliant watches, and they have a dial by Carhi Voutilainen, and really nice case, I think.
Yeah,
and
that, I see.
The Velo. I don't like that one, the Velos, but I do, but not the salmon. I love a salmon dial, but that blue one, just brushed blue, is a fantastic dial. Have you seen those, Alex?
I'm looking them up just now.
They're awesome value for money. I've been looking at these since I first bought this one out, and I'm really considering it, for a small brand.
Yeah, I saw it, and I thought too that the value was very interesting, and the quality seems there, and I think it would be a great buy. I also love the blue dial, blue brush dial is great.
Yes, yeah, that's what I mean. That's the one I like the best, actually. And with those Breguet numbers and everything, it's a really nice look.
Not very expensive, I think.
What were it, 6,000 or 7,000 euro or something? But no,
maybe like not that. Even. I don't
not
remember.
That.
But
no, actually, I think they were less. They were less.
Yeah, maybe they're under 10K. That's for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
And they're 3,000 euros. Not even 2,900.
Oh, that's crazy, but. I think there was an issue. I wanted to wait till they sort of get going a bit, because they had a few issues at the start. I'm not sure it was with your start off things or whether customers had problems, you know, with communication and everything. There was something that sort of didn't gel with me. Otherwise, I would have probably bought one.
I think it's a Spanish guy, if I remember
yes,
rightly.
Sorry, yes, yeah. You're right, Spanish.
It's a Spanish guy who kind of, he has the idea, the design, and then he makes parts in Germany and Switzerland, and they all come together. I don't know where they're assembled. I don't know if it's in Switzerland or Germany.
It could be in Barcelona. I'm not sure, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah, maybe.
Definitely Spain.
And basically, he's taking, you know, people who make great cases and people who make great dials and people, and just he comes up with the design. And he makes them, and they're very good value. And he's selling them because I think maybe he doesn't have a proper business for it, you know, like a brand with people working for it. So he can allow himself to have a very low margin.
It's kind of a side business. Hang on, I've got to open my third worker chamber.
The movement's
hang on a
very
sec.
Simple, but it's done in a kind of interesting way, which I can appreciate.
Yeah. The movement's a basic techno time, but it's decorated nicely. It's I like it. But I've just been waiting to sort of see the longevity of it because I'm not sure how they're going, but I would like to order one. I wanted to talk to the guy actually about getting a limited edition, like a series, a small series, and make it, you know, a proper, I think that they could have a few printed dials. I think I wanted a proper gear share with a small, you know, limited edition for some friends. And much more expensive, well, more expensive basically, but it is a nice base watch, really.
You know, I think it's someone that should come on the show. It would be interesting to find out, really, because it's kind of a mystery around this guy and this brand, you know, this Spanish guy making watches. That would be quite an interesting story for Roman or
for Defining Time, yeah, for Anthony Roman.
For Defining Time, yeah. That would be a great idea because I had the same, I did exactly the same thing as you, Rob, a few months back and kind of saw the watches because I was reading the article on Monochrome. And then I dug into it and I thought it was really a very interesting take and the design is different and the finish on the movement is really, really nice.
Yeah, he says expected delivery March, April. Whether that's all been pushed back now because of the COVID thing or not, I wanted to see him. That was the top of my list, you know, for guys to see at Baselworld, but obviously that didn't happen. So, but I do like it and I love a salmon dial, and that salmon dial one even looks really nice. But I wanted to sort of
What do you think about other things in the same price range?
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah.
You're not getting anything close to that. Nothing close to that at all.
It is made to look more expensive than it is, both back and front, yeah, obviously. But I think if you could just put a guilloche dial on that, that'd be a sensational watch for $2,000 or $3,000 more even. It'd be so nice. So that's been on my radar for a little while, and I want to talk to the guy. If you're motivated, I don't know why that popped into my head. I need to actually give him a call, but you know that's a problem, Benoit. When you know what it's like when you go to Baselworld every year, and then all of a sudden you don't go, and I just lose contact with all these guys, especially being so far away here now. At least you can just pop over the border. Who do you know at AP? Do you know a few guys at AP then in different workshops?
I know some guys who work there. I know one who's been who was working in Besançon. There's the service après-vente. How do you say it in English?
Yep, for France. Yep. Yeah. After sales service. Yep.
Yeah, so I know guys there and. Yeah, the Sav. And
Who's the manager there?
I don't know. I'm not into the watch business that much. I just know some guys because we meet through work or other. But no, I had I know a guy who works in Audemars Piguet and he works on the movements. I know he's just one of the employees. That's it. And the one I know who is, let's say, the most higher up is the one who is at Bulgari now. He used to be at Breguet, and he used to tell me incredible stories that for the Baselworld shows, they make watches with diamonds and sapphires and rubies, and then when they come back from Baselworld, they take off all the stones to be able to sell the watch, because so they unset the stones. And then,
Just unset it and then what? Polish it so it's all.
No, they put a different case on it.
Yeah. They change the case and they unset the stones because they make like 10 watches with the stones and they'll only sell 5. So then they unset the others and recase them and sell them like 20,000 euros less or, you know. And now, you know, it's when you think about it, you think, gosh, it's all for the show, you know, it's all for the show.
Oh, absolutely, and it's kind of true. It sounds logical to me because I've seen it before, but I just think things you forget about basically. But it's true. The general public, they don't really hear about it much, but the stuff that goes on before and during and after the shows, it's just a whole new, it's a parallel universe.
I love when people outside of the industry know more stuff than I do, though. That's great. It makes me feel so special as an employee when other people are telling me stuff.
I've actually never been to Baselworld or to Watches and Wonders or, you know, the SCIHH because I've got other stuff to do. And I'm not in the watch business. So you know, I'm still on the consumer end.
But you're coming to Robfest, right?
Oh, of course.
When Robfest happens, yeah.
And I hope to be able to buy some Wakashanki.
So, no, we'll be giving it away by the pallet at Robfest.
Oh, great.
A fountain. It'll be like a champagne fountain with Wakashanki, yeah.
But that aside, we'll have to catch up anyway. You're not far from Geneva, right? I mean, we can catch up anyway next time we're back there, for sure.
Yeah, well, I was actually planning to go to Perth in February.
What?
Why?
Well, because...
Why not?
Yes, because we went to Sydney 2 years ago and we had a great holiday there. And I have my stepsister who lives in Sydney, who now has the Australian nationality, and well, she's Australian now, basically. And so we wanted to go back. So we planned holidays for February 2021. And we thought instead of going back to Sydney, then we'd all meet in Perth and have a road trip. So it was planned. So I would gladly come to see the Geneva Blue Boutique and meet Rob and have a Wakashanki with you. But I don't know.
The Geneva Blue Boutique, it's a shed and also yeah. a public toilet.
No, it's got two wheels, the Geneva Blue Boutique.
And but because of COVID, I don't know if we'll be able to go. Yeah, so it's true. Still on hold at the moment because you can't have flights, you can't book flights, you can't do anything. So maybe it will be. And if it isn't in 2021, it will be at another time, maybe the year after that. But we will be coming to Perth, whatever happens, because we have that road trip in mind.
I like how you're going to go to Perth. You're going to go to Perth to see Rob. I was the one that spoke to you first. Rob, I introduced you to Rob. You're my friend. You're not Rob's friend. You're going to go and see him. That's fucked up.
Alex is proud of having got someone on the podcast after my 15 people and the next 15. Alex has got one to come on, so he's all happy, you know. So you got to make him. You got to make him feel loved.
Make me feel special. Well, Benoit was actually one of the. How long have we been speaking for? Not that long. Maybe 6 months.
Yeah,
that month?
Yeah, maybe. Time. Well, since the start of the website, I think. Maybe 2 or 3 months into the website, probably.
Yeah, but I remember you were one of the first people, along with Stuart Watch Brosophist, that I would speak to a lot, and it would be, it'd be like 1 o'clock in the morning, and I'd be like, I'm still speaking to this guy that I don't know on the internet. And I remember when all the COVID stuff happened, Actually, before Rob came over to Melbourne and we did that show where I was predicting just the melting and the downfall of everything, and I was speaking to you one night and you're like, Alex, it's okay. Keep calm. It's going to be fine. Like, everything's going to be fine. Like, I know people in Switzerland. I know people in the watch industry. It's going to be fine. So do you still stick by that prediction, Benoit, that everything's going to be fine?
Yeah, I got a lot of things wrong. I got a lot of things wrong, like many people. I think, you know, I was wrong on so many things. But I always think in a very long-term scale. And I'm pretty sure in the long-term scale, the big brands will still be there. The machine will keep going, maybe in a slightly different manner. But the Swiss have... A very they are very flexible, meaning that they can just, like the USA, they can fire employees and stay low for a while and then just shoot back up. So I'm not really worried about the Swiss watch industry. I think, like I said at the time, some micro brands will probably have a lot of trouble because they'll have probably some micro brands sell more to the Asian market or sell more to the USA or sell more to Europe and they'll have a big slow in sales. But I doubt there'll be major mishaps in the big watch industry.
They've got a lot of cash reserves, most of these brands, especially when you talk about the very big ones. And they have very clever management, you know, and they can just chug through. They'll just scale back a bit, and
they are used to it because they initially had the knowledge, they initially had the craftsmanship, and every time there was a crisis, and there has been many, they always managed to keep that craftsmanship, to keep the quality, and just just slow down for a while and then just gradually come back into place. And I remember that I met a guy who makes wooden micro-marqueterie. It's like wooden dials. If you see, there was there was a Patek Philippe exhibition in New York 2 years ago, I think, where with the Indian North American themed wooden dials, and he makes them, and he lives and works just the village next to mine, and there are only two people in the world who make these dials for Chopard. For there's him and there's the apprentice he formed years ago who works in Switzerland, and basically he used to work for a Swiss watch company who worked for different brands. So he made dials for I think it was the Panther for Cartier, I think, and he made also the Atmos clocks for Jaeger LeCoultre, all in wood, and he made dials for Patek Philippe, and then Patek Philippe just hired him, and Patek Philippe have all these guys who are like him, who are very strong in a very specific technical artistic field, and basically they just keep them working, keep them at work, there'll be 20 years where no one will want a wooden dial. So they just let him work, and they'll just all stock it in safes at Patek Philippe. And then for 10 years, it's going to be the thing, the wooden dials. So they'll just sell lots of watches with wooden dials, and he'll just still be working like he did always. And then that thing's going to stop, and they'll still keep him. So they have that that long-term vision and that power, and that power to keep all these crafts growing, even if there's no market for it. If there's no market for enamel dials, they'll still make them and stock them and keep the people working on them, so that when it comes again into fashion, they'll be the only ones who know how to make it. So I'm not worried about the Swiss watch, high-end watch.
I remember that's what you said that time. But I was like, Benoit, everything is fucked. We're all dead within about 3 weeks' time. You're like, Alex, it's okay. There's a guy making a dial of wood, and he just does three a year, and he is going to be employed for the next 20 years, and they're keeping everything in an underground bunker in the Swiss Alps. It's going to be
fun. But that's it.
And I was like, well, I can't really argue with that.
That's pretty much how it is, yeah. And that's why I remember when the discussion with Shapiro, what's his name, Alex, with Anthony and those guys, Drummond, when he was talking about people storing away the guilloche machines. I mean, I could see his point of view, but it's not necessary. It's not just the brand just putting them away so no one else can have them. It's the brands putting them away because they're going to use them, and they will use. They think so far ahead, these brands.
Of course.
They have the budgets to do that. That they will buy up because I know they're going
to
use them one day.
Have them made as well?
No. They want to use for their marketing. They want to have a certain amount of these. Breguet put one of these machines in every one of their big, their own boutiques. So they have to have a fair number of the things. And okay, there's a bit of it where there's a bit of hard feeling, and people think, oh, it just sucks because it's we can't have it because they're putting them away. But they're not putting them away just to so they can't have them. They're putting them away to use them eventually. They're strategic. There's a little bit of that, but the strategy behind it all is very, very long term. Really long term.
That is exactly it. That is exactly how they work, and that's how I've been told by the people who I've talked
with. I've worked with these guys. It's nuts. But yeah, so it's. And people look at that from the outside, and it's a bit like the whole thing about the Swiss, during the war and stuff, and people disagree or agree what they did, but they were doing stuff, okay, it was in their own interest, but they were very clever about it, and it worked. It works, and they're good at this, the long-term thinking, basically. So I'm not defending them or thinking, saying that they did it the right way, but as far as the watch companies go, they think ahead, and so they don't get caught out. That's what Zenith got caught out. And if they hadn't been for the old guy putting the machines away, they would have been stuffed with the El Primero. But they didn't. They weren't, because there was guys like that. And there's guys like him all over the place in all these different brands doing stuff, long-term thinking.
And once you know the Swiss and you understand how the Swiss mind works, you totally understand all this. It just falls into sense. Into place.
Thank you for saying that. That's exactly what you can't God. Explain that to people. It's something you can't explain to people.
You can't explain it. You have to go over the Jura, have a 10 euro drink, you know, 10 Swiss francs coffee or whatever, and just
beer
meet
and
people.
Grenadine. Have you ever had a beer and grenadine, Benoit?
Yeah,
of course he has.
Yeah, of course. You know, that's just basic. No, but you have to understand. I have a, you know, I know if we have time. Oh yeah, we're not even at 2 hours, so
plenty of time.
just to understand the Swiss mentality. When I was knee deep in the vintage watches buying and reselling and repairing with watchmakers, I sourced an old fucked up Jaeger LeCoultre military three-hander.
That's a technical term.
Yeah, all fucked up, and my stepdad had an old Memovox, you know, the Memovox from the 70s with a rounded mm-hmm. case, big rounded case, and it was also all fucked up, and he told me, well, you know, can you do something about it? You know, it was the watch I had when I was a kid too. So I said, well, look, you know, I have this Autre Jaeger LeCoultre. I'll drive the 1 hour to Le Sentier and I'll bring both watches to Jaeger LeCoultre and they'll have them expertise tell me it would cost so much to have them back. And basically Jaeger LeCoultre, if you bring them the watches, they send it back free to you if you don't do the work. They send it back free. I thought, well, I'll just go. So I went to Le Sentier, had a glass with a nice lady in the salon at Jaeger LeCoultre Le Sentier, and I gave them the two watches, and I waited for the prices they would charge if I wanted them restored, because my usual watchmakers couldn't. It was too fucked up, basically the two wrecks, it would cost roughly 2,500 francs. To get them running again in a correct manner, and so I said no because it wasn't worth the money, so they send it back to me, and you know it's the Swiss, and that's where you understand how the Swiss work. They declared for each watch 2,500 francs in value for two wrecks who, you know, they're not even worth, you know, 200 euros each, maybe, you know, and they declared 2,500 Swiss francs in value. And I got nearly 1,000 euros in taxes just for them to send it back 1 hour away from the manufacturer. And I phoned them and I told them, I said, look, what have you done? You know, you declared two wrecks who are going to go on eBay and, bring me maybe 500 euros, and you declared them like 5,000 euros worth of watches, and you know, it's worth nothing, you know. So that cost me a lot of money, but that's how the Swiss work, and you just can't bend around it. So you just have to be careful, and then you understand why they keep all this stuff. You know, it's very different way of thinking.
I liked when Rob, you were on that radio show recently.
Oh, was I?
What was it? Steam 108 or whatever it was.
I don't know what it was.
Queensland. Yeah. And the guy said, this is why I love you so much. The guy said, why are Swiss watches the best? And you said, because they're really good at marketing. Which I thought was such a kick in the balls to the Swiss watch industry.
Yeah.
It was beautiful because people that are listening to that, just general, that was just like regular radio, right? Just the general public listening. And they're asking like, why? And this guy's saying like, why are Swiss watches so good? And you say, because they're really good at marketing. I thought, and there was no further explanation after that. That was it.
Well, there might have been, but it was all edited. It was all shortened down. That's the thing. But it was okay. It came out. Yeah, I realized that when I listened to it as well. It's like, okay. Well, yeah, but that's kind of true. I mean, they're very strong at a lot of things. The Swiss are very good. I mean, it's a bit like, I mean, in Europe, they have this whole system where they learn things. That's the only way I can put it is they learn things properly. They have an apprenticeship to be a shop person. They have an apprenticeship to be a banker. They have an apprenticeship. You know, you got to do 3 years to do whatever. And it's not going to uni and just sitting in a lecture theater and taking notes and, you know, crapping on. It's doing the job for 3 or 4 or 5 years before you actually, you know, you're qualified. And that's how they do everything. And they're just, you know, and a part of that, they learn all about the culture. They learn all about languages. They learn all about, there's all different stuff. Plus the actual technical, for example, for watchmaking, there's the technical part, there's the theory part. And then there's the guys that I was in the workshop with at Audemars Piguet, the young guys doing the actual apprenticeships. They did what I did, which was the theory and the practice of watchmaking. They did general culture for the country. They did languages. They did, you know, it's like us doing English in high school, plus our technical stuff. They just go into everything so deeply. And it's not just Switzerland, it's different countries. And I'm sure France have a similar sort of thing. Their culture is so much deeper than ours that they spend a lot of time on that. And they just, you know, they're well read. They do stuff long term. They have this, and that's why they have the quality, you know, quality about it, different things, because they take it so seriously. Yeah. And then they take a lunch break and they take that seriously. You have an hour and a half for lunch. You know, they don't rush anything. It's brilliant. Oh, well, you know, an hour minimum. I mean, that's lunch. You got to take out, have a glass of wine with your steak. You can't just have a sandwich and a scoff down a Coke. You know, you got to have it properly. You got to sit down.
Oh God, no, not a Coke.
The French are even more so like that. They're great at the food and wine. It's brilliant. Anyway,
I was just gonna say, Benoit, before we start wrapping stuff up,
we wrap up already.
What's your complete? The guy's starving to death. He's had like 3 baguettes today or something.
Oh, fuck off.
What's your complaint about us not having enough vintage chat? You said it's too much industry chat, right?
No, I didn't say there was too much industry or independent. I say there wasn't enough vintage.
Okay, so what kind of vintage chat should we have on the podcast?
I have no idea because I because I'm not a podcaster. The way the podcast is focused around mostly the community and you know, people who are in the community, even if they're watchmakers, even if they're in the industry, you know, just have some vintage watch geeks and collectors, you know, and people who are into that. That would be interesting. That's the thing I was thinking was maybe, you know, was less in the represented. Spotlight.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, that's the thing. You like vintage stuff, Rob, and I like vintage stuff. But normally, because I work in the industry, when I come on, I just have all this rage built up inside me. And I'm like, I do not give a fuck about anything other than righting the wrongs of the industry. So I think we should definitely look at talking more about vintage stuff.
Yes.
In the future. I know Anthony's not into vintage stuff. Vinny's not really into vintage stuff.
Vinny's getting into it. I mean, the problem is, I'm not, I love it. But and I've got some old watches, but that doesn't mean to say I'm into
super
it.
Knowledgeable,
well, yeah. No, I'm not super knowledgeable about anything. But with vintage stuff, you know, they're talking about references and stuff. You know, if Roman was into vintage stuff, which, you know, he's read all the books and stuff, but I mean, you need someone like that, but who's into their vintage stuff without going into the nitty gritty of certain references and everything else. I think you can get too carried away.
For example, I don't know reference numbers. It's a pain for me. I can't remember them and I can't be asked because it's not interesting to me to know the reference number of a watch. I just want to know what watch it is, where it's been, who's had it. You know, that's interesting for me. Well, what's the history behind why it is that way, you know, and not just breaking this reference because the underline beneath the E is you know.
I think the idea that just because you know reference numbers means you're an expert on it is kind of played out a bit. I don't think that should be a thing anymore because this doesn't really mean anything.
I'm no expert. You know, I know what I know and I don't know so many things and I'm still learning every day. I learn things and listening to you guys, I learn a lot of things and That's seriously? What's interesting. It's just yeah. Well,
how to drink badly.
When I say you guys, I
know, it's, okay. You're not talking everyone about us specifically.
Not just. That's
why. Why does nobody learn from us? That's what people always say. They're like, I listen to Roman and Anthony, and like I expands my mind, and I listen to Rob and Alex, and not so much, but. Have a nice time, and that's the main thing.
No, I really loved that first episode with Rob when he was talking about when he was at Audemars Piguet, and he was talking about anglage and stuff. That I learned lots of stuff. You know, no, but we do learn things, even with you, Alex, even with you.
Oh, fuck off.
Even with, I'm going to take notes, I'm going to write that down. Even with Alex, yeah.
I've never been so insulted in my entire life.
Well, no, with the baguettes, it's one on each side.
Yeah, get back to your baguettes and your onions. Yeah, that's the thing, though. It's, yeah, that first episode with Rob, it was. I remember you messaging me after you listened to that, and you're like, I could just listen to him forever and ever, right? You said that. I could listen to him for hours.
That's why I was worried about not having any more content. We used it all up in the first 2 hours of the show, basically.
You said you got it all wrong in the first episode anyway. You were saying it wasn't centimeters or inches. It was actually millimeters and this. Yeah.
Well, so. Because I hadn't drunk it. Hang on. I just opened my fourth bucket of Changi. It was, I mean, that's the thing. You go on a path or that career, whatever. There's lots of little side things we didn't take. But, I mean, yeah, you can talk about stuff, but you don't want to bore people either. You don't want to get too technical and just bore people. It's on you. Right, Benoit.
Yeah,
you can't get too into depth. Sorry, hang on. Too much mousse. she's foaming. This one's foaming. My goodness, what's going on? But I think we can. That's a good point with the vintage because I there's a lot of little vintage brands which are not that expensive. You don't have to talk about a vintage Rolex and Tudor. You can talk about, there's so many in the French brands that we've been mentioning before, some British brands, the Dirty Dozen. Yeah, so that's you're taking notes here, Alex? Because I'm not taking notes.
Well, actually, you know what? When I was doing, I messaged Dirk today and said about how I had to bin the episode. So, Benoit, we recorded this episode with one of Rob's friends, who's Wheels and Watches on Instagram. And he got disconnected from the internet about, how many times would you say, Rob?
20 times, I don't know.
20 times. And then every time he came back on, he couldn't hear Rob, so then Rob would have to hang up. So by the end of the podcast, I had about 60 different audio clips from the podcast that I then had to put together like some kind of fucked up audio jigsaw puzzle. And it was just it was last night I decided I was like, I can't do this.
Sorry.
I'd spent hours and hours. I'd spent like, must have been more than 60 hours. I'm not even exaggerating. Trying to edit this thing for fucking months.
After four whack of Changi, this is sounding really funny, but I know it's not funny. But I'm gonna have breakfast with Dirk tomorrow. I'm gonna tell him, don't edit this out. He's going to be listening.
No,
he's going to say,
"No, I mentioned. I'm, I no, told no, no, him no, this no, today no. anyway."
Yeah,
but I was like, I couldn't take it. I was lying in bed last night editing, and only last night. When did we record that one?
Weeks and weeks ago.
Yeah. So eventually, last night, I finally got all the audio lined up, so it was in just everything was in the correct order. But I still had all the breaks in between where we were talking shit and like.
Yeah,
Rob and Dirk's like, can I hear you? I can't hear you, Rob. And then Rob would have to hang up and come back. And I just totally, I was ready just to blow my fucking head off. It was that, bad. Why did I even bring this up in the first place?
Well, because Dirk is into his vintage watches. And I think we could get some valuable content.
When I was listening to the podcast, when I was editing it, there was lots of good points. We're talking about vintage and how I can just, when I see quality vintage stuff, even if I don't know the brand, just when I look at it, you can tell if it's something that was quality at the time or not. And just because the brand isn't around now doesn't mean that it wasn't well made at the time. I guess that's the vintage message for me.
Of course. There's also very interesting stories always with vintage watches, and that's fun.
Is Rob gone again? Rob?
No. No, sorry, I was here. My bottle fell over and I was almost drowning, flooding myself again. But I mean, it's all good.
Oh my God.
Each podcast, a glass explodes or a bottle falls over.
That was unbelievable. The glass exploding. Didn't happen this time.
Do you record on a fitness balloon? You know, you have the computer on a fitness balloon with the glasses and it's falling everywhere. It's just the image I got.
I was going to Google that for the IKEA glasses, whether there was other people that could. We had two that have exploded out of about a dozen glasses, so I'm going to take them all back, basically. But anyway, we digress. Vintage, good point. We'll have to get onto that more. I love my vintage. Alex loves it. We can find guys who are vintage collectors, obviously. That's something we really need to focus a bit more on, or you know, do a show or two on them, basically. What else, Benoit? Anything else that we could improve?
No. No, I'm good.
Okay. Hey,
I'm having fun, so it's okay.
We need to do a show in French, right? We promise me we'll come back and my French is not great.
I wanted to do a show in French straight away, and I was like,
oh, yeah, why not?
Come on. You need to do one show. Like, I'm your friend. Don't forget, I'm your friend first. You can come on, do a show, and then after that, you can run away with Rob and have this wonderful French romance together and do all the podcasts you want.
Oh dear.
One first and do one show.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
We'll see. Exactly. Cool. What else? We're getting almost. I guess it's almost wrap up time. I've just started. Just cracked my last bucket, Chengi. I reckon I'm going to finish this before we finish, I reckon. Instagram, who's our recommendations? Benoit, you got someone nice for us to follow?
Yeah, I was thinking about a few people, and then yesterday I discovered a new account, which I didn't know, and which is, it always amazes me when I discover someone who's been on Instagram who has several thousand followers, and I just didn't know about him. And the name is Lotus Forachi. So Lotus like a lotus. Lotus, and Foras, Forrace, all attached. And it's basically, it's a vintage watch guy. And
perfect.
He takes amazing photos. I don't know how he does it. Probably a lot of focus stacking, but the neatness is amazing. And he has awesome, and he does like layouts and stuff. And I just really like the pieces and the accounts, and the vintage watches are amazing. And just discovered it yesterday and scrolled through, and I thought it could be interesting. So I'm sharing that one.
Mm. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, got it. Okay. Yeah, cool. Wow.
Cool pictures.
They're beautiful. Great pictures.
Yeah. Oh, he's really got that really cool middle with the color rings. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. No, he has great watches and very interesting photo which you don't really see otherwise, I find. So very clinical, but I like it.
Yeah.
Do you know Mido are doing a reissue of that?
Are they?
Oh no.
I maybe shouldn't have. Maybe I shouldn't have said that. Shit. Whoops. I might have to edit this out. I might have to check with someone.
That's interesting.
This is the one thing anyone's ever told me from work. Yeah, they've got a reissue of that coming out.
Nice.
It's supposed to be quite cool. Which is like one of the only vintage Midos that actually the Commander. I kind of like the old Commander that had the one piece case and stuff like that. But this one's is very cool. The power wind or whatever it's called.
I don't remember. Sorry, I was drinking. But I know there are some really cool old Midos you see around. But I forget what they are because I've.
That one with the color ring is super rare, if I remember rightly, like incredibly rare.
Really? It's kind of the colors as well. The colors are, you know, you don't see that. You don't see that combo, and that's probably why. It's kind of a weird, weird combination of colors.
Yeah, but it's very really strange.
Nice. Yeah, that's nice. Yep. Cool.
I like that. Strange is good.
Strange is good.
Okay, Rob, who have you got?
I don't know. Where's my list? Just ticking along. Have we had him before?
I don't keep track of these things.
I don't either.
Anthony that keeps track. Anthony's got a spreadsheet for all this shit.
Yeah, but not with ours. He only does his own.
No, I know. I remember going in and I was like, Anthony said I've finished the spreadsheet. And then I went in and I was like, he hasn't done any of my work. Lazy bastard.
Hang on, now I gotta follow him. And then just ticking along. And now I'll look him up again now because...
No, I'm just discovering the account. I wasn't following him, so he's being followed now.
Yeah, he has some cool watches. He may be in France. En France.
He's got a cool dog too. No, Perth, he says. Perth.
Ah, it says Perth. Maybe I know him.
I probably know who he is, but I just can't think of it right now because I had four whack of
tangies. Your fucking next door neighbor. Like, morning, Rob. You're like, hey.
They even make enamel together, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Probably is someone. I mean, look, follow another Perth guy. Go and see Just Ticking. I don't know. Wait. Hang on. If I look at these photos carefully, I could probably tell you who it is, but I'm not. I'm not in that sort of mood right now. I'm just trying to finish my fourth whacker. Whacker Changi. Okay. And here's yours, Mr. Watch Regulator.
I'm going for something a bit different. It's still Instagram account, but it is Petit Natures.
Ah.
Which is my good friend, not your friend, Rob, my good friend Benoit's other Instagram account, where he takes incredibly sexy photographs of animals.
Oh, you can't say it like that.
animals.
Incredibly erotic pictures of, no, like, these are some seriously sexy, but no. He doesn't have any, you've got no,
it's just for fun, just really,
you've got no, but you are a great photographer, which I hate that about you, but we'll move on past that. You don't have any cat pictures.
Hang on. Petit, there's no E on the end, right? Petit nature.
It's like petite seconde, but with nature instead of seconde.
Okay.
And with an S at the end.
Oh, I get it. Okay. That's what my wife tells me. No, sorry.
I don't have a cat's photo. That's true. I'll have to remedy that. Yes, sure.
Very cool. Some nice chicken pictures. Some nice birds.
Just no nature, basically. That's the theme. But no cats. Because I haven't taken pictures of any. But I have trouble keeping that account, going on, because it takes a lot of time. Already the watches. So from time to time, I'll post something. But I don't have enough time to do all I would like.
Yeah. No. But you do. I mean, that's obviously, photography is a passion for you as well. I remember that one. What was the thing you did recently where you had, there was like a chicken, and it was on it was like one of those automated robot lawnmowers or something, and you had a chicken.
Yes,
have you not seen that, Rob?
No.
Oh my god, was that that's that made was just history. In your stories though, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's there are so many people who have contacted me about this story. I just never thought it would be. I'm actually thinking about making a short clip, a movie, you know, with different scenes with the chicken on the.
You should, because I've not seen that. Yeah, okay.
Because it's something you see it a lot more with cats, actually, people that have those automated robot vacuum cleaners. And then it'll come, somebody will do a video, and then it'll come into shot, and there'll just be a cat sitting on it, kind of traveling around the house. Obviously, there's some kind of residual heat that comes off the engine or the motor, and the cat's just there getting toured around the house. But you had that, but next level up with a chicken. So
yeah, but the soundtrack was good too on that story. That was good.
I want to see it. I'm feeling left out here. I want to see that
it's
one.
It's gone.
I'll send you the video if you want.
I can see a chicken there. Is that? Oh, the poulet. Do you get the poulet de Brest? You go and get proper chickens.
Well, my granddad who makes the true spinet vermouth, he lives in Brest. So yes, I know Brest. Right. No problem.
You've got some snow pictures. Torgon City. When was Torgon made a city? Sorry, look at your snow pictures of Torgon. Okay, perfect. Yeah, cool.
I'm going to send you that video, Rob. I'm going to send you that video on Instagram of the chicken. There we go. It's sent, so you can see it.
Brilliant.
It takes Rob about 4 days to get anything.
Ah, come on.
And internet shit.
Yeah, my internet is pretty crap, I must say, but still. I reckon I'll get it.
You do realize I am sending from France a video of a chicken on an automower to a guy in Perth I've never met.
That's why the watch community is so incredibly wonderful. Like, how great is life?
Oh, here it is.
That's awesome.
In fact, I've been mixing beer and whiskey.
Grenadine.
And wine. But I think it's great that we can
do
that.
I better not start playing that, or else my Zencast will drop out because I haven't got enough network,
don't
bandwidth.
Okay, Rob, what have we got to do?
Get a bed.
Okay, wait a minute. Benoit, what's all the things we do at the end of the podcast episode?
You play guitar.
Before that.
Finish my beer.
Go and leave a review on the Fifth Wrist website. It's a lot of fun. I think I must be about 5 reviews now, I guess.
Wow.
Maybe I
5 or 6, yeah.
Four
yeah.
Super five, yeah.
To 10, you get to be an editor at large. If you get to 10, you're an editor.
Oh, I'll try to avoid that then.
You're and, supposed to be encouraging people to come and do it.
Follow the Fifth Wrist podcast on Spotify, on iTunes, on whatever you want, and follow the Fifth Wrist Instagram account, the Watch Regulator, the Geneva Blue account, and that's it.
Hang on. How do you say Geneva? Yeah. Geneva underscore Blue underscore, right?
Geneva and Blue underscore Blue.
Benoit. Benoit. Yeah. Can I just ask a question? How did you come across us in the first place? Not us, the Fifth Wrist.
I think I messaged them and asked them to review something. Yeah.
I think Alex messaged me to say there was a website where we could leave reviews and all, and if I was interested. That's how it
best
started.
Friends ever since.
This is back at the start when he was desperate for reviewers. Okay.
I'm still desperate, actually, because my mum, I was speaking to my mum the other day, and she was very concerned, because normally we've got about, 30 reviews that are sitting there. It's normally like a 20 to 30 day turnaround time for reviews. Mm. And she was speaking to me the other day, and she's saying, we've only got 5 reviews. She's very worried. So if you can come and do a review, just to keep my mum, to remove the stress from her life. That's she already has all the stress of having me as a son. So if you come and do a review, she can then edit, that would be much appreciated.
We can help out your poor wee mum. Okay, well, I'll do another one as well, okay? I promise on the weekend I'll try and do a review of something.
I'll probably do another one too in future. I don't know what, I don't know when. They just come.
You've run out of watches.
No,
I don't think so.
I don't think so, no. But I have to get my mind to it. And once it's started, it's okay. But I just have to have the idea.
Well, you do well, considering you have to force yourself to do it. You do pretty good. You do pretty good work. What else have we got to do? Join the Slack group?
You can join the Slack group. We need more people on the Slack group. Yeah, but the listeners that aren't. There's more listeners that can come in, basically. And go on. No, I won't say that.
What were you going to say?
Go buy a Geneva Blue strap.
Oh, for fuck's
sake. Jesus. I had to get that in before we finished.
No.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I've actually been looking at, I'm going to get some straps made.
Better than mine.
For the website.
Competition.
Get this. No. I'm not. Because I remember when I started the website and I was asking people like Benoit to do reviews on the site. And a few people said, okay, I'll do a review on the site. But if you start selling any shit,
I want mice rights.
I will never fucking forgive you. So I'm going to get some straps made up. Some nice straps made up.
Okay.
And I'm going to give them away.
We need to talk.
For free.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Because you know how Anthony has like his review of the week. So we're going to do either, at the very minimum, I'm going to do a review of the month.
Mm-hmm.
And send a strap to whoever is the review of whoever the best review of the month is. We'll send one of these straps to them wherever they are in the world. It's going to be a NATO strap, Rob. So don't stress out too much.
Can I sponsor it? Oh, I could send a strap. Come on. Anyway, okay.
Maybe you can do if people get two reviews of the month in a row, then you can get them a Geneva Blue strap.
Okay,
but yeah, I've been looking at straps. So we're going to be in the strap. I don't call it the strap business, but we're going to be
strap on business.
Some straps out here.
All right.
To sadly, Benoit, you're not eligible for that because all your reviews are in the past. But anyone else who wants to come and do a review.
Yeah, right. We need to branch out and do a French version of this whole thing. But yeah, anyway.
What, the whole website?
Everything. Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Anyway, yeah. No, I don't think so. Cool. Okay. Anything else before we wrap then?
No, just thanks. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no, sorry.
It's been a pleasure.
I was going to get to that. I was going to say thank you very much for coming on and everything. But now you've said that, we'll just segue right into that. Thanks for coming. It's been awesome. That's really been really cool. It's great to talk to someone who from overseas, where, especially where, I mean, I don't know. I'm sorry, Alex, but this is so familiar with me, where Benoit lives, where, you know, the whole area, where he's been, what he's done. It's brilliant talking to someone, and I'm really keen to do a French one, Benoit. We'll have to come back here and do one with that.
With pleasure, avec plaisir.
Avec plaisir, parfait. Bon, là on va faire. We're going to come back on YouTube as well.
It's going to start.
We'll have to do a YouTube as well on my dodgy little YouTube channel. It'll probably grow my listenership 50 times if I can get all the French guys, and I doubt it too. But anyway,
I think the most exciting thing for me is that many, many months ago, I asked some guy to review a watch on the website, and we've been speaking since then. And then he became one of our top fans of the podcast, and now he's on the podcast. It's just, I think it just shows what a cool community we have. Not to be too much of a bloody hippie here, but I think it's just like a really cool thing, and it's great. I really appreciate the support Benoit's given me and us. Like, you've always shut up, Rob. He always comes and he's like, Alex, I've left a review, and he always does really cool stuff and writes cool stuff, and sometimes he just messages me for a chat, which is nice as well.
That's beautiful.
And that's what I really like about the community and all the people you meet, and just, you know, just have a chat and talk about the hobby and just share passion. That's
agreed.
That's the best thing.
100%. Brilliant. Okay. Awesome. Well, look, we will definitely catch up next time either of us are in Geneva. I'm going to take Alex next time.
Of course.
Many drinks will be had. And thanks for coming this time. It's been awesome. Great to meet you virtually. And what else, Alex? Come on.
Stay on time.
Stay on time.
Stay on time.